Good morning and welcome to Morning Cyber. My name is Justin from Rogue Security. I'm here with my co-host,
Joe Flower. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing great. I am doing fantastic. I had a great weekend. And before we get too far along, I would like to also welcome our guest, Greg Squires. Greg is an information security professional with an incredibly strong interest in open source intelligence and also volunteers with the anti-human trafficking intelligence initiative in the fight against human trafficking. Hello, Greg, and welcome.
Hello, Justin. And I must say, you forgot to mention the long walks on the beach, because that's also extremely important to me.
We put that at the beginning of every one. If you're a guest or you're a host or co-host, that's just in your profile, no matter what. How are you, Joe? How was your weekend?
It was all right, to be honest. It was we had a lovely meal last night, like I was saying about before. We met up with my sister and her boyfriend, and he's a good lad. I think he's a nice guy. It was funny, you see. So I did the whole big brotherly thing where you try and intimidate a little bit. It doesn't work, so I'm far from intimidating. And when we left the restaurant, I said, right, Sophie, who's my sister, I said, you go with Katie, she'll drive you home, and Willie can drive me home. So I got him to drive me back, and we had a good chat in the car, and he's a nice lad. We stopped at the gas station, and he'll never listen to this, but it's quite funny. I went in to go and get something, and he said, no worries, I'll get some gas, which was great. We then got back in the car, and I was like, oh, wow, you paid for that quick. Did you do the self-service? And he went, yeah. So we got back to the house, and lo and behold, I get a kind of nudge from my sister to say, Willie's just going to go and pay for the gas. He was too embarrassed to tell you that he drove off and forgot to pay.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, I've got a lot of respect for him, because he freaked out to the point that he didn't know what he phoned his dad to ask his dad what he needed to do. So it was a good meal. And then today was just one of those relaxed days where it's not been too sunny, not been too cold. So it's been a chilled day. Yeah. How about you, Greg? What did you do this weekend?
I did my fantasy of being a suburban dad. So I got my New Balance shoes on, and I went outside, and I looked at my girlfriend at one point and went, you know, it's not the heat, it's the humidity that gets you. While I was mowing the lawn, and I came in at one point and literally made myself a fresh glass of lemonade, and you know, I was about to put on some Jimmy Buffett, but I think she stopped me. So it wasn't too bad.
Wow. Fair enough. Now, is it a ride on, or you got a push mower?
No. I'm not. I haven't advanced in level to that kind of dad yet. Okay. So that's something you got to earn.
I appreciate that you recognize the level. That there's a level up that you need to get to be like the dad on the ride on with the beer on a Sunday afternoon, right?
I think it's like a snowblower. Like in Canada, you don't, like, there's no hand-me-downs or anything. It's just, my father owned this snowblower before you, and I think it's your time to get it.
Wow, that's amazing. That's so true. Joe, I wanted to, this was an article that I found, and I know you're kind of a social media guy, and I know how much you're fond of Instagram. And so This article is Aussie Surfers Hacked Instagram, Sent Sexually Explicit Images to Her 40,000 Followers. And this one really just, I mean, any type of social media, any type of hacking, that just drives me. But when it's like, this girl was 18, she's still relatively young, that, I mean, it just kind of hits you in a different way. And I'm just curious, you use a lot of Instagram for business purposes, but what are your thoughts on that this could be hacked as well.
I follow, so the hashtag that I follow for a lot of the business stuff, as you can imagine, is just hashtag cybersecurity. Now there's one account that comes along quite a lot, and they basically, it's the hackers of IG. Now they perform, if you pay them, they can hack anybody you know's Instagram account for you. I hate it with a passion. I feel, but there is a big problem with it. Like social media in general, the main basis of getting social media in the first place is to have something to look back on, have like a storybook of your life and to show people just what you get up to. Mm-hmm. So it all boils down to, I'm assuming they actually didn't just hack what was it in her social media platform already? Did she have those pictures maybe in messages or something like that?
Yeah, I believe what had happened is they accessed her Instagram account.
Yeah.
And I would suggest that the images were already in her Instagram account, just private.
I think that's where the problem is, to be honest. Like, for me, I'm always a firm believer in, like, safety is by not putting stuff like that anywhere near your social media. I mean, I know for a fact that someone could hack my Instagram, but there's nothing on there that is bad, if you see what I mean. Like, I wouldn't, mm-hmm. I rarely share pictures, and I normally share pictures of, like, well, me and Katie, to be honest. It's one of those where if we go out for a meal, we take a picture. Mm-hmm. On the business side of things, though, I do believe that Instagram has some quite good measures in place for that. Like, there's different ways that you can tie your different accounts together. I make sure to obviously use different passwords for every Instagram account. It's not just attached to my account, if that makes sense. So basically, going off of what you said, how it was a girl of 18, it boils down, I hate anybody that hacks in someone else's social media. It's a private thing, mm-hmm. Which is funny because it's private, but they're not, because you're showing everybody everything on there. It's just difficult. Social media is a difficult one. And I think at some point I'd like to get a couple of guests on this podcast for people to understand how, say, for example, we got an influencer on who talks about how they safeguard against that event happening. Because people like yourself and I that don't have massive followers, we don't really have to worry. But I'm intrigued to see how someone with like 1 million followers would safeguard.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's a very good point. And I, you know, you kind of said it in there, but we've gotten really comfortable with social media and really comfortable with our phones, and just really comfortable with what we're putting on our phones. Because we have this imaginary trust. Greg, I mean, that's with your experience and just sort of with some of the work that you've done. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel for her. That's not something, it's a very 21st century fear, but it's not something I think anybody should ever have to go through. But this is definitely one of the scenarios, like Joe was talking about, where a lot of people see it as a storybook, right, of their life that they're curating. But that's not what it is, right? You're never going to have 100% control over what goes up there. It's so weird that you know, people want this very granular exposure, right, of their entire life and what they're doing. It's almost like opening the floodgates and then wondering why you can't control that stream. It's a super difficult, you know, thing to wrap your head around, especially coming from the security background of, you know, the CIA triad, and always trying to balance how you can make something accessible but then also secure for somebody. You know, that's not something I think the average person who signs up for Instagram is going to understand, mm-hmm. Or know about. It almost reminds me of that website that it's a couple of years old now, but it was like Break Into My House or something like that. And they would collect all kinds of pictures and addresses and stuff like that from people's social media. And they go, oh, hey, look, this one person is on vacation now. This is their home address. You can break into their house. You know, there's so much information flying around about us that we don't know about. It really sucks when somebody has to learn that lesson the hardest way possible, that, you know, you are still at the end of the day exposing yourself to the outside world. And, you know, it's a tough thing to have to deal with when the outside world kind of comes into your home and, you know, where you think you're safe. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you say that. I don't know if either of you remember Foursquare, and that's,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You were referring to kind of where you could check in at your location and you get shared with your friends so they know where you are. I went to a bar once, a local bar here in Charlottetown, and they had their Foursquare screen up on a monitor. So you could basically see all the, where the drunk people were signing in there, and like the whole bar could basically say, okay, this drunk person is not home. They're very drunk. They would likely not be home for a very long time. I'm going to take advantage of that. But I always thought that that was so funny that people felt comfortable in just announcing where they were.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of, I hate the word influencer, but when they're starting to have kids and stuff like that, and they're putting everything about their kids out there. That's something I would say my generation is probably the last one who is going to experience not having every waking moment of your life on the internet. We were very close, but we're not. You know, how many of these celebrities and people who were just raised on the internet, not understanding the danger, and then from the time this person is not even born to right now, their entire upbringing and life is available on the internet for anyone to watch. You know, I follow a lot of like dogs and like puppy accounts on Instagram, and in the same way that I can watch that dog go from like a brand new puppy to like, you know, a super cute big land hippo, people with less cute intentions than me can do that, but they can do that with you know, children and other people's kids. And the internet really is, you know, the Wild West. You can see whoever you want, wherever in the world you want, right, at any one point in time. And I don't think people realize that. So it just blows my mind to see, you know, how much exposure people are giving their kids.
So true. Social media security. Do yourself a favor. Review your social media security and privacy settings.
Yeah, and don't drag your kids into it either. Don't like lock down everything and just, you know, they're going to learn to hate it that way. Don't just shut them off. Because the more secure that things are, sometimes the more like complicated it can be. Like, sit them down and make them understand, like, you know, the internet and security, it doesn't have to be like a boogeyman. But when I was a kid growing up, you know, growing up in the cybersecurity atmosphere, as soon as it was explained to me why all of this stuff is so important, then I was like, oh, you don't have to tell me twice. I'm obviously going to, you know, make sure something like that doesn't happen. Like, this needs to be part of the curriculum for kids to understand the safety associated with why you wouldn't want, you know, Google to be able to see your address or your GPS information every 30 seconds. Like, it's just the argument that you know, if you have nothing to hide, then you're fine. That doesn't exist anymore.
No, it doesn't. And that's a very good point. Joe, what's up? How's it going? What have you been seeing in the news and around the world?
Good. Well, I mean, it just kind of something that we spoke about last week. Actually, I was watching a program that I enjoy watching quite a lot, Black Mirror. I don't know if you two have had a chance to watch that yet. And there was an episode to series 3, episode 3 is called Shut Up and Dance. Now, Justin, on our Friday podcast, we were talking about how people can blackmail you in the whole sextortion thing. So I just thought that would be a good one for people to watch. And I'll put a link to it in the description and stuff like that. So that was just came to my mind after you spoke about it last week. So quite an interesting one. In regards to what's been going on recently, I've seen something. I don't know if you two have come across it as of yet, but the cyber attacks that have been coined to have been happening between China and India. Now, I don't know. Have you two seen any of this as of yet?
So, I mean, this is the India-China thing. I mean, China and everywhere thing has been ongoing for a very long time. China's been in the news recently for attacks on Australia as well. But I'm curious. I haven't heard much on the China-India relations in terms of cyber. Greg, have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where it's like, see no evil, hear no evil. Because it is happening, you know, over in Asia, it's so hard for us to comprehend what that can entail for us and how when you see all these giant cyber attacks happen between countries, it's only a matter of time before that starts to happen to us. You know what I mean? And it has happened to us in the past. We've seen it, but it's really scary to see. You know, I feel like everybody's kind of been getting ready from a nation state perspective. So watching the gloves come out is scary.
Yeah, very, very much. So, and I mean, I think the most interesting part of it, it kind of draws back to social media and the use of TikTok. So they're saying that, it's all hearsay. I don't know for a fact, but it says that China were using TikTok. Obviously, a country where TikTok is one of the most prevalent mobile applications is obviously India. So they're using that as a way of kind of tracking people and all that kind of stuff. It's very interesting. And there's articles that can be found sprayed right across LinkedIn. And the BBC have done one. I must admit, my main source for cybersecurity news is the BBC, just because I get alerts come up on my phone every morning. But the cybersecurity hub I know put out a couple of different things about the use of TikTok and how dangerous it really is, and how we don't actually understand the apps that we're using.
I think is the most important. Well, I mean, TikTok, you know, that obviously comes out of China, but if you're in China, you're actually not even allowed to use TikTok because it's such a security threat. They built it, but they have their own for internally, which is nothing new in China, but that should kind of tell you everything you need to know about how dangerous TikTok can be.
What would I call this? I guess it would be a mission, so to speak, is always the big thing with them is advancement. Intellectual property, information,
technology.
So a lot of the times when you hear about, you know, especially Chinese cyber warfare, it's going to be, you know, technology related or intellectual property or organizations who have specialized in something in technology. We won't talk about it, but there was an article I was reading for the 10 biggest data breaches of 2020 so far, and 7 of the 10 have been healthcare related, which is just mind blowing, and also supports what we've been seeing in the security world, where, you know, China has really, well, not even just China, but other nation states are targeting intellectual property related to COVID-19 research. There were some genetics companies involved in there, some specialized healthcare companies. It's China really understands the value of information, because they're so old that money doesn't really have the same value it does there that it does here. So they value things like data, information, and knowledge a lot more. Yeah, so I was also reading that with some supported data, July 4th weekend has always seen an uptick of phishing emails. So for all of our U.S. friends out there, you know, in the U.S. and around the world, just keep an eye out for your Independence Day related phishing emails. The charts that they provide in this article that we'll provide in the show notes are extraordinary. Through, you know, all the way through the middle of July, so it's pretty crazy.
Nice, fair enough. So, I mean, I had a couple of questions for Greg while we've got you here, if you're up for it. The main one is, obviously Justin has mentioned when he introduced you about your kind of work with the human trafficking side of things. Now, just what is that? I know, just for people that don't actually understand as to what it is that you would be doing, can you just give me a quick 5-second synopsis kind of thing?
So the purpose of the Anti-Human Trafficking Intelligence Initiative, they're very unique in their methods of detection, and they're, you know, mandate is basically to collect information, provide it to the people that need access to it, right? So mainly it will be a lot of financial intelligence. The digital stuff is pretty new, but where my sort of job comes in is helping to coordinate some of the open source intelligence associated with potential human trafficking situations. If you're not familiar with human trafficking, you know, at this point in time, there's more people who are like enslaved worldwide than there ever has been like in the history of history. So it's it's really rough, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. And understanding the way that, you know, slavery isn't, you know, people in chains. It's, you know, taking somebody's passport, paying them, and transporting them from typically a lower income country to a larger market, typically from like Eastern Europe or Southeast Asia, into like, you know, a Western country, and essentially holding their identity hostage. So, you know, they don't get access to their passport, they don't get access to any of their documents. Anything they need is provided by the people who are you know, responsible for trafficking them. That can go as far as like plastic surgery and dental work. You know, they turn into a product, essentially. They cease being a human being in the eyes of these people. And so that's it's really tough. But by leveraging a lot of the open source intelligence, you know, there's a lot of information that can be gained there. There's a lot of stuff nobody else is doing, and a lot of stuff I can't talk about, unfortunately.
Oh, of course.
But it's extremely important if you understand where the large percentage of people below certain, you know, like poverty lines and stuff like that. This is the world that they live in and that they have to face every day. So.
I find it just so interesting how you got involved in that, number one. And I do think it's brilliant how you're mixing kind of a passion to do better with something that you enjoy in your work and every day-to-day life. And it's really cool. I just wanted to kind of circle back to, we were talking about how hacking Instagram, Justin. Mm-hmm. So a prime example, I'm on the Instagram account now because I wanted to try and see if something would come up, and it has. So a post on Instagram has come up. I'm not going to say who it's by just because I don't want to give them publicity, to be honest. And they go through all the methods that they can provide to you if you're trying to hack someone's account. They can either go through the phishing method, so just a generic kind of phishing attack, attempt to gain sensitive confidential information such as usernames, passwords, credit card information, network credentials, and more. So then the second method that they go on to use is a key logging method. So these are things that I don't actually understand, so I'm going to need you guys to kind of give me some examples. But here it states, key logging is a practice of covertly recording input signals into a computer from a keyboard so that the computer user is not aware. So what is key logging?
Yeah, so Greg, do you want to field this one?
Yeah, sure. So key logging is essentially just capturing all of the inputs somebody is making, usually with their keyboard and their mouse. So what are they typing in? You know, what are they clicking on? Nowadays, key logging will typically go as far as just like straight up recording somebody's screen along with the inputs. But kind of back in the day, I don't even know if I'm old enough to say that, but it was just the inputs from somebody's keyboard. So you could see everything they've typed in. And typically, you know, that would include like passwords and stuff like that. Because they're not actually hacking into anybody's account. They're just either tricking them, well, that's exactly what they're doing, into providing their password most of the time.
Yeah. Okay. It is quite funny because we've obviously spoken before about how people can put their details into websites without really thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And there's one here, a fake follower website. So this guy has created a website where in which people, he kind of makes them believe that he can get them more and more followers if they just kind of log in through his portal, or her portal, sorry. And it says, in this time, everyone fishing, but you can make scam websites for Instagram growth services, and users always put passwords with usernames. So it's the easiest method to get someone's password. So basically, if something says we'll get you more followers, don't use it. Don't put your password in, I think is the best way to describe it, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting post. And I find it funny because, and I don't know who this is, and I'm not judging them by any means, but there's a bit of a sense of, I'm getting a sense of lack of awareness from them. Mm-hmm. Because what I'm noticing there's like, those are all certainly techniques that are built around sort of accessing your password, finding your password, getting you to get your password. So like, those are all very social interactions, and sometimes you're utilizing like the Instagram, I forgot my password, to see if you can get, you know, into another person's account or something, or see what information you can tell. But, mm-hmm. you know, it really does come down to, you know, ensuring that, just go through the settings of your social medias, go through the privacy and go through the security settings, read them. You don't need to check them all the time. Just ensure that you may not be giving away information that would be beneficial to an attacker. Enable multi-factor, which is also something you can do in the settings. There's, you know, and learn those signs. Actually, those are all great signs for a normal person to look out for somebody trying to access their Instagram. A lot of what's happening today and these days is social engineering. So they're just trying to communicate with you. They're trying to start the conversation. I bet there's a ton of people listening to this podcast right now that are thinking, I did actually get a lot of people trying to befriend me that I don't know in real life, that, you know, they just start to have a conversation. They seem really friendly, and that's great. We're social people. We're social beings, humans. So we enjoy conversing. But if you don't know somebody in real life, and this isn't like a business social media account, I would recommend doing a little bit of extra background on that person before you add them as a friend. Because even the difference between what a friend on social media has access to in your profile and a non-friend, they're going to see two completely different profiles when they access Joe Flower on Instagram or Joe Flower on Facebook, because of how you have your security settings. So, you know, if you happen to have your animal as a password and you're posting your animal's name all over Facebook, they're probably going to be able to use that and just try a bunch of different iterations of it against all of your different accounts, and maybe they'll get lucky.
Yeah, with the things that you're posting as well, you know, the content itself, a lot of people don't realize can really, really leave you open to those sort of breaches. Because obviously, you know, you post a photo, somebody can look at it, and you wouldn't believe what people can achieve as far as, you know, they might see a single gas station in the background of a photo and be able to tell you exactly where it was taken, right? But most photos you take have something called EXIF data, which is exchangeable image file. And basically, if you take a photo, there's a lot of stuff hidden in it that you don't necessarily know is going to be there. So if you just take a photo with your phone and send it to somebody, typically if they run that through an analyzer, and you know, EXIF data is just there for anybody that wants to read it, they can see the date, time, sometimes GPS coordinates of where it was taken, the hardware of what you took it on, what the operating system was, what the model phone was, the aperture settings, how much light you're letting in, like, and all of this stuff is just there in photos. And a lot of people don't realize that. I think some social medias will like wipe it, but for the most part, if you upload a photo, you're telling a story and you don't even realize it. The picture is literally worth 1,000 words, except those 1,000 words are all data points that people can use to hack you, essentially.
That's crazy. I didn't even know that. And that's why maybe I needed to have this conversation, because I didn't realize that. I suppose the photo is just the front cover and the book is what is embedded in the photo, is what you're saying. So would they be able to get my location from that? Like where, like you said, where it was taken and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep.
That's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Yeah. Sorry, Joe. So it's the metadata of that file. So it's telling you things like, you know, the location of the photo, the time it was taken, the type of device it was taken on, all of the settings. These are all really normal things for photographers. But what we don't realize is that information stays with the image. And so when we put it on social media, that can certainly become a problem.
So Justin, what else have you seen happening in the news in the last couple of days?
So I don't know if you guys heard or recall the EasyJet breach, data breach.
Yeah.
They might be out of business now because of this, but.
No, I think they are EasyJet, as in EasyJet, the airline.
Airliner, yes, that's right.
Yes. Yeah, so EasyJet, dominantly in Europe, their breach was quite dreadful, to be honest. I don't know if you saw how many were affected. It was mad.
Significant. Well, now it's starting to... So the problem with the data breach is that you really don't know the impact until like 2 years, 3 years, 4 years after, right? Because they're actually facing a lawsuit that is part of... Yeah, so the data breach exposed the private details of 9 million passengers. 9 million passengers. There, 10,000 of those passengers have joined into this lawsuit where they are entitled to up to £2,000 or $25,000 each. The total amount of this lawsuit is £18 billion. So this is why I'm like, have they gone out of business yet? Because you just don't know. Because with a data breach, you're going to continue to feel it years down the road. And I don't know if £18 billion is going to impact them, but that does seem like a significant amount of money.
Yeah, it is more than significant. I mean, these airlines, they're budget airlines, so they don't make, I can't say this, I can't say they don't make a huge amount of money. Obviously, every airline makes a huge amount of money, but for example, you can get flights there in England. You can fly to like Paris or something. If you book it last minute with EasyJet, you get a flight for about £7.50 to up to £13. So we're talking like $20 Canadian for a flight. It is just mad. But £18 billion would really affect them drastically. But this all boils down to, are they actually going to have to pay out? Are they going to have to pay up? Because somehow these companies get away with it, don't they?
No, that's right. And you know what? Data breaches have been one of those things that have usually been pretty successful, because in almost 100% of these cases, there is something that organization could have done and should have done and likely was part of a plan that just didn't get implemented. And so like, it's not uncommon for a data breach to lead to a full, full just bankruptcy of a business.
Yeah, and that sometimes that's the awful part of not being cyber secure, really, isn't it? You're basically opening yourself up to the risk of going out of business. It boils down to the whole ransomware thing. I remember, Justin, I don't know if you were on the call with me when we were talking to somebody that we know out of New York, where they were talking about the car garage, the garage, if you will, Canadian, but car garage that operates where you basically drive in, you park your car up, you go to work for the day. But it was only a small company and they were hit with a ransomware attack. They hadn't got their cybersecurity up to date and they ended up going out of business because they had to pay up and they went out of business because of it. So that whole boils down to, you wouldn't have to pay up if you didn't protect yourself in the first place, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, if you're already running on fairly low margins, a breach of any kind or a cyber attack of any kind can have just a devastating impact.
Yeah, very much so. Very much.
I don't think the thing that a lot of companies realize is that when you pay for cybersecurity services, regardless of, you know, who it's from, you're not paying for something that might not happen. You're paying to lessen the likelihood that that ransomware attack that's going to cost you 40 times as much as you were paying those cybersecurity experts. That's what you're paying for, right? Is to try to make that chance as low as possible. If you think you can't afford some penetration tests or some managed security, then, you know, what happens when you're paying, you know, a few thousand or a few million dollars to somebody?
Yeah.
Just to get back to zero, not even to improve anything, just to get back to the same place you were, right? Yeah. Do not pass go. Do not collect $100.
Yeah, absolutely. Thousands at best, millions at absolute worst. But I like they often with these data breaches, they give them values. So they'll give each record like a value. And I don't recall the numbers, but I think, you know, the U.S. is amongst the highest valued per dollar value per record anywhere in the world. Canada's fairly close up there. I think they were fourth. You know, really those first world countries, those ones are going to be the ones with the higher impacts, but it doesn't matter where you are, you will be impacted.
Why is it that they're given a higher dollar value out of interest?
Well, I mean, I think there's probably a couple things. My opinion on that is that, you know, in, you know, the United States, Canada, China, the UK, they have governments who can enforce that a little bit more rigidly. And, you know, I'm sure that like our gross domestic product value and dollar amount factors into that amount as well. So really they kind of look at it and say, what is this individual data point? How are we going to value this? And what is the value to the customer? So they look at it and say, is this a piece of healthcare information, right? Could this harm the individual? Okay. And that factors into sort of the dollar amount. But I think what they're probably measuring is, if you find any articles, they're probably actually just measuring, they're looking at how much a data breach cost a company, looking at how many records were breached, and then doing an average of like, okay, what did each value cost? And that's likely what we're seeing on the internet, but in an article, for instance, but there's a lot of factors that actually go into the cost of what a record is worth.
Fair enough. I mean, there's obviously this week, there's going to be lots of different things that are going to be upcoming, I think. I mean, one thing that we missed out was yesterday, Sunday, was Elon Musk's birthday. So that's how old? I think he was 47, I think.
Who's birthday?
Mr. Elon Musk.
Okay. That's
fair. Oh, so I'm assuming your feelings towards him aren't very highly sought after then.
You know, I think he's a really smart guy, and mm-hmm. I love what he does. I love, you know, what he's doing with Tesla. I love what he's doing with his technology. I just think, you know, he rubs me the wrong way, and I think he could make better decisions for his businesses that would probably help the people who are invested in his businesses as well as the clients of his businesses. So I, you know, I'm not going to go out of my way to purchase anything from Elon Musk, Tesla, or whatever his companies are creating. You know, I think they do a lot of great work and a lot of great things.
You know what? If we didn't have snow on the ground like 9 months out of the year, I would absolutely have a Tesla. Yeah. But I'm just waiting for the kind of Steve Jobs to drop about him, you know what I mean, where you find out he's like an absolute psycho and people hate working around him, and it's coming. I can feel it.
Oh, I've already heard that. I've already heard stuff like that. That's Yeah, that's a thing. But it's he has this vision. He's creative. I understand that. You know, we are not all the same type of person. We have different personalities. So I would never judge a person based on that. But there's also something to be said for listening to others and, you know, continually improving and getting better and looking at, you know, the way you go about things and just doing good for the people in your life and your customers and your clients. I just don't know if that's who he is.
Just saying, though, if you make the same decisions he's made in his life, you get private Grimes shows whenever you want. So
I don't even think he's got that much money, right? Like, because he puts all of his money into his businesses, and none of them are really, like, profitable yet. And I could be wrong in all of this, and if I'm wrong, I'm sure our listeners will let me know. But and so I know for him, it's not about money. It's about what he does and the creativity of it and building something and making something that just improves the world. So I do appreciate that.
Fair enough. I think he's great, to be honest, from my opinion, but each their own. I can go into it on another.
We'll do a book club. We'll all read his biography and then we'll reconvene next week and we'll all give notes.
Yeah, well, we'll see. So Greg, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been good to get your insight into different topics. I know Justin was excited to get you on. He said that you're a bit of a rising star, so to speak, in the cybersecurity game. So yeah, I just want to say thank you very much, and I'm very sure that we'll have you on a couple more of the upcoming podcasts.
No, thank you. It was a pleasure, and I appreciate that Justin can make up stories like that. I appreciate it.
Not totally made up, but I just want to echo that. Really appreciate having you on, and
that's for sure. Have a good week, guys, and we'll be back on Friday.